In this book, you've said that inequality is key to tackling not just our economic problems, but our social problems too. Why is it, Kate, that more equal societies almost always do better?
Well, we think the central idea is to do with relative social position, the social differences between us, and status competition. So that in a more unequal society, the distances between us, the social distances, are sort of stretched out. And it's those differences and the way they make us feel and the way our feelings make us behave or act directly on our bodies that mean that we see a whole host of health and social problems being more prevalent, being much more problematic in more unequal societies.
I think I should clarify what we mean by saying that more equal societies almost always do better. We've looked at all sorts of social problems and health issues and find that societies with smaller income differences between rich and poor, that means societies like Japan or the Scandinavian countries, compared to Britain or Portugal or United States, which all have much bigger income gaps, the more equal countries have better health. They have fewer teenage pregnancies, they have less violence, kids do better at school, they have lower obesity rates, fewer people in prison, a great host of problems where more equal societies seem to do much better.
The data that you've used to support your thesis was amassed over 30 years. That's right, isn't it?
Well, there were early battles, but initially the picture was one centred on health looking better and life expectancy being longer in more equal societies, and all sorts of controversies around whether that was true or not, and if so, why it was true. It's much more recently, while Kate and I have been working together, that we've realised that this picture applies to all sorts of other issues as well.
Kate, the richest in Sweden score better in literacy tests than the richest in the more unequal societies such as Britain. Why should that be the case?
Yes, well, we do see that the effects of inequality seem to go all the way up society. And although people at the bottom seem to benefit the most in a more unequal society, you're right, even at near the very top, people seem to be doing better. And we think probably there are two reasons for that. One is that we're seeing long-term effects of early childhood damages from inequality showing up in adolescents, in teenagers who are taking these tests. So that family life is more stressed, more strained in more unequal societies, and that's applying to everybody, not just the poor. And we're seeing that reflected in how children do, how they grow up. But also, we think there are very direct effects of inequality on things like cognitive performance. And so even if you're close to the top, but you're not at the very top, there is still a sense of your relative social position being lower than somebody else's, and that clearly can affect performance across a whole range of...
But there are all sorts of experiments with kids, for instance, in primary schools, where you artificially make a distinction, say the kids with blue eyes or brown eyes are better than the others, and you see how it affects their performance, and then you say, oh, I got it wrong, and it's the kids with the other colour eyes who do better, and over the next week you realise how it affects their performance. There are lots of experiments showing how affected we are by these social stereotypes that seem to have implications for people's expectations of our ability. So ability really conforms to those expectations.
Is it all to do with stress and the way it affects us emotionally, the way it makes us feel, these disadvantages of living in a more unequal society? Or are there more sort of material differences that we could point to?
I think that it's to do with stress centred really on the quality of social relationships. And just as many people intuit that inequality is socially divisive, we find that more unequal societies have lower levels of trust, people less willing to trust each other, they have more violence, community life is weaker, all these on rather good measurements. And that, if you like, instead of a more cooperative, trusting society, more reciprocity and so on, we move into a more competitive society based on status competition, where other people are rivals, where perhaps you shouldn't trust them. And that is a much more stressful society. not only for adults, but it affects family life, the quality of family life, and so the cognitive and emotional development of children.
The Labour government in the UK has attempted to tackle poverty, child poverty reduction being one of its main goals over the last 12 years. Do you think that what they should have been looking at is relative poverty?
I mean, I think it's very important that they have been tackling poverty, and really they have been tackling relative poverty in our society. But to ignore the whole of the distribution ignores the impact that that distribution has itself. So while alleviating poverty is a worthy goal, and I think everybody agrees it's something we should do, the government over the past few years has not been particularly interested in constraining runaway incomes at the top, and perhaps not realising that there is evidence that it's the gap that actually represents differences between societies that are damaging.
And what about the differences between rich societies and poorer societies? I mean, we've talked about the differences within an individual society. What about the differences between, you know, the developed world and the developing world, if you like?
These differences are obviously very important indeed. I mean, developing countries and much poorer societies need increases in their real material standards of living to gain increases in life expectancy and all sorts of other benefits. But after a while, at a certain level of economic development, you reach a stage where those relationships, for instance, between life expectancy and gross national income per head of population, break down. So in the rich developed world, there is no relationship between life expectancy and gross national income per head. Living standards are no longer the important determinant. It looks as if instead of it being the absolute material standards that matter in the rich world, it's social position, the inequalities, the differences between us, which give rise to feelings of superiority and inferiority and the costs of that.
Sweden and Japan are two countries that have relatively equal distributions of income. Why are the suicide rates so high in those countries?
That's an interesting one, I think. Suicide is almost the only problem we found which is more common in the more equal societies. I think, and we can only guess about this, but I think that is probably because there's some truth in the sort of cliche that violence either goes inwards against oneself in terms of suicide or outwards in terms of violence against other people. Maybe that's to do with whether you blame the rest of society for your problems or yourself. And it looks as if maybe in more equal societies you're more likely to blame yourself and other people in more unequal societies. So they're inversely correlated often, homicide and suicide.
Don't more equal societies, I mean, those that would advocate maintaining the status quo in a more unequal society such as Britain, would say that to sort of level things out would stifle excellence and stop people wanting to achieve and do better than everybody else?
Well, there's a fair amount of evidence that economic growth is not hampered by equality. You can have both. Also, we found just over the past few days that patents per capita are just as high in the more equal countries as they are in the more unequal, probably higher. And so clearly...
That's a measure of creativity.
You could take that as a measure of creativity. And so clearly technological innovation and creativity isn't being hampered by equality. And the idea that you have to have a vast amount of inequality to create a meritocracy where you reward people for creativity seems to be a myth that's not supported by the data.
Because you're losing contributions from the part of society that's not near the top, all the ones who feel diminished by the inequality and participate less.
And I think it's really important to point out that social mobility is lower, it's worse, in more unequal countries. So although we think of America as the land of opportunity, and we think of our own country as one where, you know, if you work hard and aspire, you can do well. Actually, it's much, much harder to be socially upwardly mobile in more unequal societies than it is in the more equal ones.
Climate change is seen by a lot of people as being the main challenge facing the human race over the next 100 years. How can a more a more equal society help us reduce global warming?
Well, I think I think there are a number of different ways in which greater equality can contribute to dealing with CO2 emissions and so on. I think the first is probably the ways in which inequality increases the pressure to consume. The increased status competition makes it more important to work longer hours, to earn more, to spend a larger proportion of your income, to save less. All these we can show with the data. And so consumerism is much harder to control in a more unequal society. But we also see that there is a sort of going with the greater sense of community in more equal societies is a greater sense of public responsibility. So more equal societies recycle more of their waste. They're better in a number of other ways that express that public responsibility, like, for instance, giving more in aid to developing countries. But there is also evidence that shows that more equal countries think it more important to keep to international agreements on environmental issues.
If we accept that equality in a more equal society is a desirable thing, how should policymakers go about reducing inequality?
Well, we're epidemiologists, you know, we're not policymakers. And I think the most important thing we have to say on that is that it's clear that there are different ways to achieve equality. Different societies become more equal in different ways. Some do it through government solutions such as redistribution, welfare benefits and taxes, and others achieve greater equality by having smaller differences in earnings in the first place. So I think what we would say is that it doesn't matter how you get there, it just matters that you get there somehow.
Yes, there are very striking examples. I mean, Sweden is the big state example, depends on redistribution of income to get its greater equality. Japan, quite the opposite. It does much less redistribution, smaller differences in earnings before redistribution, and of course much less welfare expenditure. And we see the same contrasts amongst the American states, where we've also looked to see whether greater equality produces these benefits.
Richard Wilkinson and Kate Pickett, thank you very much for talking to us.